Hello and welcome to The Europeans. That was very excitable, wasn't it? But I feel like it makes up for the fact that I was really sad a few weeks ago.
Good for you, Dom. You're back. You're back, baby.
I'm back with a vengeance. I had my first physiotherapy session yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
And my physio farted.
Sorry, what?
She farted.
I wasn't expecting you to kick this podcast off that way. How did she deal with that?
She was like pulling my shoulder and it was super painful. And she just did a very little fart. And I didn't even really notice it. It could have been her shoe. But instead she went, "Oh, shouldn't be doing that, should I?" And then she was like, "Oh, but don't worry, it doesn't smell because it didn't have the air afterwards."
I really like how she dealt with that. I think that's quite a Dutch way of doing things. We've been talking about Dutch directness a bit, you and me, and I think that's a nice example.
Yeah.
Just deal with it, you know? I feel like a Brit would sweep it under the carpet. Not physically, but...
They would pretend nothing had happened, and then I would get the giggles. And it would be really awkward because it would just be two of us in a room with one of us laughing at the other one, and we both know what we're laughing about.
That's my worst nightmare.
Anyway, how's your week been? I see you've been skiing around Paris. Yeah.
I haven't personally been skiing. You know, after your ski accident, I thought, never again. This is not for me.
Yes, that's very wise. We should actually put it into our European contracts that you are not allowed to ski, as is apparently in a lot of operatic contracts. I don't think it was in mine at the time, otherwise I'm in trouble.
Are you serious? There's a ban on opera singers skiing?
Yeah.
What?
And I've got a friend who had a contract in LA and there was a ban on him surfing.
Oh, that makes more sense. I guess the skiing thing must be like, what dangerous things do people do in Europe? Skiing must be up there.
Yeah.
Along with binge drinking.
Absolutely.
But yes, it has been very snowy here. I haven't been skiing, but there has been complete travel chaos. Like 2,000 people had to sleep in their cars, which is pretty crazy. And all the buses in Paris got shut down for the whole city. I kind of feel like our listeners towards the east of Europe are going to be laughing at the French inability to deal with what is only 12 centimetres of snow. But yeah, it's been pretty crazy and really, really pretty for about the first 5 minutes. And now I'd quite like for it to go away.
It did look gorgeous, those photos you posted on Twitter, despite the fact that I did find it quite triggering due to my recent skiing accident.
It's okay, Dominic. It's over now.
Well, you say that now, but you were just posting willy-nilly.
But everything's better now. You've got your farting physio to fix everything for you.
Oh my God, actually, everything's worse since I'm having physio. It's really painful.
Is she kind of yanking you around a lot?
Yeah, exactly. It was much easier just like keeping it still and being like, no, I have to be careful with it. Now I actually have to try and move it.
Oh dear.
And I meant to be dancing next week in a show.
Dancing?
Yes, with a bowler hat and everything.
Dear, oh dear. Well, you better sit still for a bit while we do this podcast and just rest some.
What have we got coming up?
We are going to be talking to our unofficial Warsaw correspondent, Anya Jakubek, to explain what on earth is going on with this new Holocaust law that the Polish government has passed.
And then we are going to be speaking to Greg Morlock, who is a transplant ethicist, described on his Twitter account as the 7th best transplant ethicist in the Birmingham Coventry area. I mean, we always speak to the best people. People, don't we?
We've got a big fan base in Birmingham, in central England, if you didn't know where that was.
Have we?
No, I'm just trying to, you know, keep things relevant.
Lying.
Fake news.
But we are speaking to Greg because there's a lot of movement around Europe at the moment in terms of organ donation. And in the Netherlands this week, the Senate are going to be voting on whether to move to an opt-out policy for organ donation at death, as opposed to the opt-in that they have at the moment. And England is also looking at it. Wales recently moved over to opt out, and there are various other movements which we will talk about later. But first, back by popular demand after last week's inauguration, we are going to do our Good Week, Bad Week feature. This week I've been very kind and given Katie the Good Week position. Who have you chosen?
Angela Merkel, Queen of Europe. She is back, very much like yourself, actually. She's finally managed to get a deal to form a new coalition government. Do you know what I realised?
What?
The whole life of this podcast, Germany has been without a proper government.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of crazy, huh?
Has that overtaken? No, it's not as long as how long the Dutch were without a government last year.
That's true. You guys were without a government for how long?
208 days it was. But aren't there still some hurdles for Angie.
Very much so. We're now sort of getting back towards the stable, usual, boring Germany that everyone is used to. We're not quite there yet. So this week, the deal was agreed, but it still has to go to grassroots members of the Social Democrats, which are the coalition partners of Angela Merkel's Conservatives. That's 460,000 people that have still got to vote on whether they actually want to approve this deal. And some people reckon it could be pretty tight because a lot of people are really cross with their leader, Martin Schulz, for agreeing to go into government in the first place, right? Because a lot of people, especially on the left of the Social Democrats and young members, really wanted to go into opposition and then fight back and actually try and govern themselves. We still have another few weeks of instability ahead because we won't get the results from that vote until probably early March.
The terrifying thing about this setup is that the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, this pretty far-right party, are going to be the official opposition.
Yeah, which is pretty terrifying when you put it that way.
Yeah, and in some ways, some people could argue that that's even worse than having a slightly obscure party in power.
Fine, when you put it that way, and lots of ways, really, it hasn't really been that good a week for Germany. It's been a particularly terrible week for Martin Schulz. He's going to have to quit the party after flip-flopping on whether he even wanted to govern or not. And he's even going to have to give up his dreams of becoming foreign minister after it became clear that he just completely lost all credibility and the party just can't stand him anymore. And Merkel's had to give up a bunch of key ministries to get the Social Democrats on board. So it's probably fairer to say it's been a relieving week for her. Could have been a lot worse. Although, as we say, it's not over yet. It's been a good week for us, though, because I was really worried that we were going to have to change the big, shiny Angela Merkel rainbow picture at the top of our website. And I really can't be bothered to Photoshop a new one. So that's good. Who's been having a bad week?
It has been a very bad week for the French fashion designer Christian Louboutin. He's most famous for producing these red high-heeled shoes with, you know, the colourful undercarriage.
Don't say undercarriage.
And there's been this long-running court case that started back in 2012 when a Dutch shoe retailer called Van Haren brought out a line of shoes, I think by Halle Berry, that also had red soles.
Oh, I love Van Haren. They've got Wi-Fi in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to sit in there all the time.
Well, I've never been there, so you know more about them than me. You should be the Dutch correspondent. So Louboutin filed for brand infringement in the Netherlands, and this was back in 2012, and they won a temporary injunction. The case was then referred by Van Haren to the European Court of Justice for appeal. And it was bad news for Christian because the ECJ's advocate suggested that Louboutin won't get away with keeping this patent. It's for like quite confusing reasons to do with some legal definition about the shape and colour and whether shape and colour can be separated. And I did not understand it.
Whoa, that sounds like some sort of French existential philosophy.
Yeah, it does.
Can you separate colour and shape? They're not the only people that are allowed to have red-soled shoes, is that it?
It's not been decided yet. The judges are yet to give their final ruling, but it's looking from this week like the judges will rule against Louboutin. And this is probably surprising to them because in the US, they've had a few similar cases where they've managed to keep their trademark. So they'll be particularly pissed off with the EU. But I was thinking about it and I was like wondering, does this Dutch shoe retailer really care anymore? Because this was back in 2012 and fashion moves so quickly, as you well know, Katie.
As a fashionista.
Yeah, as a fashionista that you are. So shoes from 2012 that they were so desperate to sell and were told that they weren't allowed to, they're totally out of fashion now.
Are they? But those red sole ones are considered kind of timeless, aren't they? Or are they considered a bit trashy now? I don't know. I don't keep up with things.
No, neither do I. We should have got a fashion expert on. Oh, well.
Poland has passed a new law which makes it illegal to attribute Nazi crimes to the Polish state. So you can now be fined or even go to jail for a maximum of 3 years if you do that or suggest in any way that the Polish state was guilty of war crimes. Now, no one disputes the fact that horrific crimes were committed on Polish soil during World War II. Of course, Auschwitz is in Poland, just to give one horrible example. But the idea of talking about like Polish death camps, for example, using that kind of phrasing is hugely, hugely sensitive in Poland and is likely to make a lot of people angry because it makes it sound like the state had some measure of responsibility over what happened there.
I think we can agree that it's not great to misrepresent the way Poland was involved in the Holocaust or the way Poland Ireland was used in the Holocaust, I should say. But this law has come under very harsh criticism. So we are going to give our unofficial Polish correspondent, Ania, a call to try and find out why the ruling party have passed this law, even though it seems like a pretty politically risky move on the international front.
Guys should offer Poland some kind of honorary producer credit for your podcast or some kind of award, because they're doing an amazing job at keeping you guys full of material.
Keeping us in business.
This was obviously blown up quite badly in the Polish government's face internationally, but can you give us their perspective on their things? Like, what's the logic behind this bill?
As I see it, there's two main things here. A, there's the question of how Poland generally feels that the way people see our situation regarding the war abroad is a little distorted. And that's a feeling that is widespread. Even people who don't support the current government do sometimes have a sense that we aren't treated fairly when it comes to the war. But then the second question is legislation the best way to go about that? And that is something that even people who agree with the first point do not agree with the second point. And of course, as everyone can see, the bill did not go over well. Israel got really mad, really, really mad. The states were like, oh no, this might have repercussions on your relationship with us and Israel. Generally, this did not win us any friends.
Yeah, which was kind of surprising considering last time we were talking, we were saying, oh, there's this like new EU international facing leader who's taken over, who worked with Donald Tusk. Yeah, you see, I've learned how to pronounce it.
Well done.
And it seems like Morawiecki hasn't quite followed the path that we hoped he might. Is this bill popular in Poland? Is there a big support amongst like the supporters of the Law and Order Party? Or it's not the Law and Order Party, is it? It's called the Law and Justice Party.
Law and Justice supporters are pretty loyal. So they generally support whatever the government comes up with. But the bill is garnering criticism at home just as much as it is abroad. Obviously, the opposition isn't happy with it. And there's generally this sense among critics at home that there's this feeling that it's better to educate people instead of trying to legislate. And I mean, there's the whole question of freedom of speech, which this bill seems to come up against. But for many years now, the foreign ministry has had this program of scouring the internet and politician statements for the term, the erroneous death camp term. Mm. Every time it comes up, they send a message to the media outlet or to the politician asking for a correction. And personally, I think that's a really good method of trying to educate people, raise awareness about the situation. But when it comes to handing out fines and prison terms, that seems a little extreme. And then there's also this question of how it seems like with this bill, Poland is trying to lay down a black and white view of things when the war is so nuanced and complicated. And Israel is also worried that Holocaust survivors will be put in prison or fined for mentioning things that Poles may have done to them during the war. So there's a lot of problematic aspects here. Some people in Poland fear that this bill is making us look like anti-Semites, which is definitely not the intention.
Having said that, I did see that the Israeli government said that this comes at a time of rising anti-Semitism in Poland. They've been saying, like, on the Polish internet, on state media, they say that there have been a lot more anti-Semitic remarks. Is that fair to say? Is that something that people have been noticing?
Well, I did read that statement from the embassy, and they mentioned, they didn't mention these examples specifically, but over the last week, I think, on state TV, there were a couple instances where the commentators did say pretty drastic things. There's one commentator who said, you know, if we're going to call these death camps Polish, then we might as well also call them Jewish, because who did the day-to-day operating of the camps? Well, it was the Jews. And who died in them? Well, it was the Jews. It was this really awful statement. So I don't know. It's hard for me to say if there's more anti-Semitism, because obviously I'm not an anti-Semite. My friends are, and my boyfriend's Jewish. He's definitely not. But in terms of what in the local media, what we've seen, that there have been a few instances. That's the thing that's worrisome about all this, is that I don't want the whole world to suddenly see us as anti-Semites, because we're not anti-Semites, or at least most of us aren't.
I know Israel has said that they're hoping for changes to the law. Do you think after seeing the backlash, the Polish government might think, oh, you know what, this whole thing was designed to make orange better and that's not really working out? Do you think there might be some tweaks to the law after this?
The president signed the bill saying that he was going to send it to the constitutional court so that they can make sure that it's not going to infringe on freedom of speech, that sort of thing. So that people, academics or artists, aren't going to have problems because they talk about this. But the problem with that is that the constitutional court is controlled by the government. So it's not clear what's going to happen there. But the other thing is that the whole situation happened weeks ago when the parliament passed the bill. And immediately Israel responded. Immediately, soon after, Poland's Senate still passed the bill with no corrections. And so if the Senate was willing to pass it despite the backlash and the president was willing to sign it despite the backlash, I personally don't see them changing the bill. I think they're just going to carry on doing what they're doing.
Which sounds like Poland's approach to stuff in general, really, at the moment.
It does sound like Poland's approach to stuff in general. It's a tricky question because I do think that there is something to be said about the way the rest of the world sees us with regards to the war. I mean, I had this interesting situation when I lived in New York. I had a roommate who was American and Jewish, and we had been living together for a few months at that point. We got along really well. We were friendly. I don't remember how it came about, but at one point he said, "Your people killed my people." Whoa. Like it was like in the cartoons where the jaw just drops. Like that was me. It really, the way he said that, it equated Poland with Nazi Germany, as if we were collaborators. Whereas, unlike the Vichy government in France, Poland's government never collaborated with Nazi Germany. Also, it's important to note that Poland was the only country where if you help Jews, even by giving them a glass of water, and the Nazis found out, they would kill you and everyone in your family. More than 6,700 Gentile Poles were given the Righteous Among Nations Award from Yad Vashem for having helped Jews during the war. On the other hand, there were Poles who did denounce Jews, who killed Jews, who did terrible things. Poland doesn't deny that there were instances where individual Poles did terrible things.
It does make me think about this general climate we have at the moment of disinformation and fake news and the general national attempts to defeat fake news. Macron and Merkel have both announced their own bills, also kind of controversially. And I wonder, actually, this may be slightly more extreme than what they are suggesting, but it's kind of in the same area. If you're talking about prosecuting people for saying things that are wrong, that is a threat to the freedom of expression.
Right. That's totally true. I mean, I'm thinking about the States, for example, and how people can say anything there.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I think that's the best way to go about things. I'm a proponent of giving people more freedom than less freedom. But this is clearly freedom of speech is one of the issues that have come up. And also, I mean, it's also complicated because this bill would apply to Poles and non-Poles. So how do you go about fining or handing down a jail sentence to someone abroad? I mean, Barack Obama in 2012, I think, used the erroneous death camp term in a speech. And so if that had happened now or once the bill takes effect, how would we go about sending Barack Obama to prison or fining him? You know, it just seems like it's going to be very difficult to enforce as well, which is another issue.
That was Anya, as always, being super helpful at explaining all things Polish. Can I advise you all, listeners across Europe, to follow her on Instagram? Because not only is she a great person at explaining Poland, she's also a really super talented artist. And her Instagram feed is an absolute delight of things that she has been drawing and painting and creating in all kinds of amazing ways. Her handle is at amjakubek, amjakubek. Check it out. Should we go from Poland now to Inside the Body?
Ooh.
We're going to talk about organs. What made you want to talk about organs this week, Dominic?
Well, it's being talked about in the Netherlands a lot at the moment because the Dutch Senate are currently debating whether or not to move to an opt-out system for organ donation. So that means that you would automatically be put on the donation register for when you die unless you get in touch and opt out. So obviously this is something that people feel really personally about, and understandably it's your own body, but it can be a great help to people, I think. And there are various countries in the EU that have already moved to this opt-out system, including Croatia, Austria and Wales, just to name a few.
And France. We've had it here since last year.
And France, sorry. And England is currently going through a consultation process. So if you have an opinion, you can in fact get in touch with your local representatives. Anyway, before you do that, you should listen to this chat we're about to have with Greg, because he is a medical ethicist at the University of Warwick, and he specializes in organ donation as an ethical dilemma, and hopefully he will be able to pick it apart a bit for us.
Hello, Greg.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you guys?
We're very well. We're very excited to talk to you, mostly because we, Dominic and I, are huge fans of your Twitter handle.
At Greg Likes Organs.
Thank you.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's really good.
Can I just ask, Greg, on a really practical level, if you have an opt-out system, has that largely in different countries that have done that, does it increase the rate of transplants?
So it does increase transplant rates slightly, but not by as much as you might think. So in Wales, there have been a few additional extra donors, but it has been nowhere near as significant an increase as people anticipated. And I mean, it's early days, so it's difficult to know with certainty whether that will continue to be the case. But it does look as though simply moving from an opt-in system to an opt-out system won't provide dramatic increases in the number of donors.
I read that figure about Wales, but I also saw that in Germany, which currently has an opt-in system, it's only got 12% of people consenting to organ donation, whereas Austria, which has an opt-out system, has about 99%. And Germany has a real shortage of organs at the moment for transplants. And I read in Deutsche Welle this week that Germans are actually crossing the border to Croatia to try and get organ transplants. So would you suggest that that wouldn't necessarily be solved by Germans moving to an opt-out system?
I think it's extremely unlikely that moving to an opt-out system by itself will result in there being enough organs available for everybody to have one. There are all sorts of other factors influence the number of organ donors. So as a general rule, it's always good to have more people registered as organ donors because it increases the pool of people who might be able to donate. But there aren't that many people each year that actually die in a way that allows their organs to be donated. So one of the things that's really important in order to get more donors is to ensure that if someone is dying in a way that allows their organs to be donated, which generally means they have to be dying in a hospital in relatively controlled situations, so if someone is in that situation, then the family are actually approached about organ donation. That's not always the case. So some people who could donate organs are actually never given the chance to do so.
I'm personally like very, very happy for my organs to be given up to anyone. I like the idea of my dead body coming in handy to someone else. What are the main ethical arguments against an opt-out system?
Well, people get a little bit squeamish about opt-out systems. So I think firstly, it's worth just making doubly clear that opt-out systems don't mean that your organs will be taken automatically without consent. So the opt-out system essentially just changes the default position. So in an opt-in system, if you want to donate your organs, you have to join the organ donor register and take an active step to do so. And there are a lot of people who are generally in favour of donating their organs, but never actually get around to joining the organ donation register. And under an opt-in system, they may well not then go on to become organ donors. The opt-out system overcomes inertia in that respect. Mm-hmm. One of the big concerns with the opt-out system generally is that people's organs will be donated, and maybe donated isn't quite the right word, either without them knowing that it was going to happen or contrary to their wishes. So mm-hmm. there's some concerns that an opt-out system doesn't really reflect the type of consent that is necessary for what many people consider to be quite an important decision.
Do you think there's any ethical difference between which organs you take from people? I know that some people are a bit squeamish about the idea of their eyes being donated, But I mean, that just seems maybe a little bit vain.
You're right. Lots of people are squeamish about their eyes being donated. You hear a lot of sort of stock phrases about eyes being the window to the soul and things like that. Some people don't like the idea of their heart being donated because they associate that with their soul as well. Now, I personally don't find those sorts of arguments too convincing, but I mean, some people hold these views, and at the moment, as a society, we're quite happy to respect that and accept that that means that maybe not as many organs are donated as could be.
Which country, in your view, Greg, has got the best or most ethical organ system in Europe?
Spain is always the textbook example of a good organ donation system. So Spain, quite a while back now, actually moved to an opt-out system, and Spain has got very high donation rates. But actually, the move to an opt-out system in Spain was accompanied with lots of other general shifts in organ donation in the country at the same time. It was a complete culture shift in Spain, really, where people became much more positive about donation. Doctors became much more proactive about facilitating donation. And there was a lot of investment in infrastructure as well. So I think Spain has got it right, generally speaking. I mean, the other interesting donation system, and it's outside of Europe, is Israel. They have a priority-based system where people who are willing to become organ donors receive priority if they ever need a transplant. So ethically, there's this nice bit of give and take involved there, which seems like quite a nice idea, but...
Does it, though? I think that sounds a bit kind of cold and kind of like, well, it takes the whole idea of actually being a nice person out of it a little bit.
You can still donate because you're a nice person, but the reality is that there aren't enough people donating because they're nice people. And that means that there are lots of very nice people who die whilst waiting for a transplant. This system in Israel has increased donation rates, and that's good for everybody.
You mentioned when we were talking about Spain that this culture of organ donations being seen as a positive thing is one factor that's contributed to it. Is the cultural factor, does that cause big differences between countries? Are there some countries within Europe that are just really culturally more against it than others?
I think that there probably are. I suspect that one of the reasons for the low donation rates in Germany is that there have been one or two organ scandals there. And those sorts of things can cause a massive loss in public goodwill towards donation. And ultimately, whether it's an opt-in system or an opt-out system, we generally rely on the goodwill of the public to want to help other people and to donate their organs. And if people don't trust the system, and if people aren't aware of the massive positive benefits that organ donation can bring, then they'll maybe be less likely to donate. So I think it is important that organ donation is viewed as what it actually is. And it's an amazing opportunity to do something with something that ultimately is otherwise going to be buried or burned. Whereas if you donate your organs, you can extend someone's life, you can massively improve someone's life. So it seems like a no-brainer to me, really.
Well, Katie, are you going to go and would you opt out?
Do you know what? So just as we were having that chat, I realised I have always been perfectly happy to hand over things like my liver. I've never thought of my eyes as an organ before. And it's really true what Greg says. A lot of people, including myself, have this like instinctive kind of, ooh, like my eyes, that's a bit different.
Yeah, but you'll be dead.
I know I will be dead, but just the idea of my little eye sockets without the eyes in them, that's creepy, man.
Oh my God, you know what I've just realised? If I died in Austria on the ski slopes, because I was in Austria and they have an opt-out system, does that mean I would have automatically have had my organs donated? Or is it about your country of nationality or your country of residence?
As you were there having your armpit in this thing, they were like already sharpening the knives, hoping to get their hands on your liver.
Yeah, where they were like, ah, oh, damn.
You've probably got quite a nice liver because you don't drink very much because you're a singer.
Thank you. Well, seeing as that was it's kind of a heavy story, actually. Thinking about death is quite intense. So I think we all really need a happy ending now. And this week's happy ending actually comes from the place that I currently work in, the Dutch National Opera and Ballet, which made international headlines this week, including articles in the New York Times, for something pretty joyful. They put 4,000 of their opera costumes up for sale in their foyer with prices of up to 300 euros, I think, from like 10 euros. You had to get a ticket to get in, and they sold that in 37 minutes. I actually tried to get on the website and couldn't even get on.
Oh man, you would have thought you'd be able to queue jump because you work there.
I know, I did think about sneaking in, but I was well behaved and did not do that. But But I was speaking to the head of shoes at the Opera House.
What a job.
And she was saying that she was really excited and she was there and she'd laid out all her shoes that she was trying to sell. And she was really looking forward to having conversations with everyone and like doing the hard sell and saying, these ones were worn in this show and that was worn in that show. And she said, as the doors opened, hundreds of people just swarmed in and started like grabbing things off shelves. she just backed away and was like, I don't think I'm needed here.
Oh my God.
So they did it in order to clear some space in the warehouse and I imagine to make a bit of extra dough for the Opera House. So it's a win-win situation for everyone. I think it made people very happy.
What kind of stuff was up for grabs?
A bit of everything. Costumes that have been used over the last, I think, 30 years. And actually, wow, in the New York Times article, I saw a costume that I wore last year at the Opera House. So,
what?
I mean, I've made it. I'm probably famous now, I think.
Right now, you could be wearing a costume worn by podcasting star Dominic Kramer. Isn't that an amazing thought? Thank you so much for listening to another week of The Europeans. Do you know, it's actually our 10th anniversary this week, Dominic. We should have had a party.
We should clarify that she means 10th episode, not 10th year.
It may feel like
you've been listening to us for 10 years.
Oh, God, we're already finishing each other's sentences. Thank you for listening. It's been another great week. We've had lots of new people joining us on Twitter and Facebook and all kinds of places. But you can always help to spread the word. Leave us a review on iTunes if you've got a couple of minutes to spare. It really helps other people to find the show. And follow us on Twitter at EuropeansPod. Have a great week, everyone. Whatever you do, try not to do what the Norwegian Winter Olympics team just did, which is accidentally order 15,000 eggs in South Korea. They meant to order 1,500. Oops, tiny typo.
Have they been delivered?
They did get delivered, but apparently they have been able to return 13,500. So all is well. Not an egg was wasted.
I kind of wish I had done this happy ending now too. So should I just give you another little extra happy ending that's connected to our organ donation?
Hit me.
So there's a woman in Cardiff. She ran 8.8 miles across a beach on the Gower Peninsula and wrote out the words with her route, "Thank you, NHS," because her life was saved by a liver transplant.
Oh,
isn't that really nice?
That is lovely. And we will post the pictures to cheer everyone up after all that talk about death.
Have a good week.
Bye.